This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. So sit back with your cup of coffee, but if you're driving, just listen to the radio as you drive along and we'll talk about special topics of interest in estate planning, tax, business planning, and other areas, including the special guests who bring their special spin on what they've done as entrepreneurs, business owners, financial advisors, and the like, to tell you about their story, which is always an interesting addition to our knowledge base to find out about other people and how they achieve success. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to know more about us, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. And I also invite you to subscribe to my blog at blueprintforwealth.org, where you can find video, audio, and articles of interest on tax, estate planning, and business planning topics of interest. And lastly, please read my column in the Washington Business Journal every month entitled Blueprint for Wealth. Today, we're going to be talking about a checklist of things that you need to be aware of and you need to do when you start up and incorporate your business. Forming a new corporation or limited liability company requires careful planning and a number of key steps. So let's focus on that checklist of important issues to address. First, choose a corporate name or your LLC name. It's not easy because many names are already taken and some names may have trademark limitations associated with them. Check out the name, see if it's available at the Secretary of State in the state in which you want to incorporate. That's the first step. Second, reserve it if it is available. Third, do a Google search and even do an online trademark search with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to see if somebody is already using the name. And if they're not, try to reserve it and get up and operating as soon as possible. You may even want to trademark the name. Number two, decide what state you're going to set up your business in. What state will you incorporate in? We've all heard that Delaware and Nevada tout their corporation-friendly state laws, but you may decide that the state in which you reside and will conduct your business primarily is the place that you want to incorporate. Number three, start having an attorney prepare the incorporation documents. Now, some of our clients prefer to do it themselves, and if you're going to operate a one-man band or a one-person band so that you're the only owner and you're really not going to ever have any other owners and you're just trying to achieve liability protection, you may be able to do so on your own using one of the online services. It usually means preparing articles of incorporation or articles of organization. For corporations, you also need bylaws, and you'll probably need to have organizational minutes or resolutions of your board of directors and your shareholders. You also will need a stock ledger, which records the issuance of stock that you're going to make upon opening the company, stock certificates for corporations, and more. Number four, file your articles of incorporation or articles of organization for LLCs with your Secretary of State in the state of incorporation. It's required to officially start your business and achieve limited liability protection. Number five, determine the right capitalization for your company. You may want to make sure that you've adequately capitalized the company to ensure its success. I'm not only talking about the number of shares you're going to issue to yourself or other shareholders on incorporation. I'm talking about how much money you should permanently devote to the capital of the company. You need to consider the capital needs of the company and do it through a well-thought-out business plan and even financial projections. It doesn't have to be sophisticated. It doesn't have to be acceptable to third-party investors unless you're going out and selling stock to those investors. It needs to be well thought out for yourself, because whenever you open a business, you don't just want to do it and not really know where you're headed. A business plan is a direction in which you're going to be heading, and it gives you the ability to focus on achieving goals and a strategy to achieve those goals. The capitalization that falls out from that says, I need to have a certain amount of capital permanently devoted to the business so that I can continue to operate if revenue is not coming in and continue to pay my expenses. Number six, once you've determined the right capitalization and your capital structure, and going to an attorney and an accountant will be helpful in this regard, issue stock to your shareholders and make sure that you comply with the securities laws when you're doing so. When you sell stock to a shareholder, you have to be aware that any time you do that, even if it's a small company, you have to comply with state and federal securities laws. There's an overriding provision of securities laws that says your sale of stock must be done in a way that you've disclosed all the material facts relating to your business and you haven't omitted any material facts when you're making those disclosures. As long as you do that and you basically articulate what the risks of investing in your corporation are, then you will have complied with federal securities laws and you'll avoid liability under the anti-fraud statutes. A good corporate lawyer can help you navigate through the stock issuance process. If you're just issuing the stock to yourself, you don't have to be as cognizant of these laws. But anytime you're issuing stock to a third party, you definitely need to be aware of it. Number seven, if you're going to have more than one owner or more than one shareholder, you need to think about and very seriously think about whether or not you need a shareholders agreement for a corporation or an operating agreement for your company, limited liability company. On top of that, you may, in addition, need a buy-sell agreement. These agreements regulate corporate governance among the shareholders in terms of what decisions they may or may not participate in. They also deal with what happens if you die or become disabled, or another shareholder dies or becomes disabled, or if they leave the employment of the company, or if you can terminate them for any reason or for cause, and what your rights are as the majority owner of the company vis-a-vis the minority owners of the company. So these are really important agreements that need to be entered into if you're going to have two or more shareholders or owners. In a corporation, make sure you have a corporate minute book. Now, various corporate actions require documentation. In a corporation, you're going to have shareholders and a board of directors. There are some exceptions to that rule for close corporations in certain states, but the general rule is shareholders have to vote on certain actions and board of directors have to vote on virtually all material actions affecting the company. The board is comprised, perhaps, of the same people who are the shareholders, but they are separate and distinct from each other. The board is charged with operating the day-to-day business of the company, and directors owe a fiduciary duty to the corporation and to the shareholders to act prudently, with loyalty, and with care in operating the business of the company. So in having a corporate minute book, you will document the minutes and consents and the resolutions of the board of directors and also the shareholders. And you'll keep that on display and available for shareholder review from time to time. Next, number nine, elect the officers of your company. Depending on your state, you may need more than one director. So the shareholders elect the directors, and the directors turn around and elect the officers. In most states, one person can hold more than one position. So if you're the sole shareholder and you're the sole member of the board of directors, you can also serve as the president and secretary and treasurer, usually, of your company. You may appoint a non-shareholder or a non-director in an officer capacity. It happens all the time, and as the company gets bigger, that's the norm. Next, don't forget to get your state and federal ID numbers. The federal tax ID number can be obtained online generally or by fax. But in the state, you may have a specific registration number, and you'll have to fill out certain forms, or your attorney or accountant can assist you in filling out these forms to get these numbers. Number 11, and very important, a lot of people forget about this, is determine if you need any special licenses for your businesses. State, federal, or local rules may require your business to get a special business license. For example, if you're going to do engineering, you have to get a special license. If you're going to do construction of any kind, commercial or residential, you have to get certain types of contractors' licenses in order to do business. Next, number 12, set up your corporate bank account. You could do it where you personally bank, or you may want to do it at a separate institution. But you always need to have a separate bank account, separate and apart from your personal bank account, for your corporation or your limited liability company. This is important in observing the formalities of your business, and it's important in avoiding creditors from trying to pierce through your corporate veil to go after your personal assets. So having that corporate bank account set up in the corporate name with resolutions adopting the bank as the depository company are really important steps in setting up your company. Number 13, if you're going to hire employees, make sure you have all of the forms and agreements for them. For example, one of the things that people forget is that every time you hire an employee, they have to fill out an I-9, which is from the Department of Immigration, and it discloses whether or not they are U.S. citizens and provides evidence of their citizenship. In addition, the agreement might include an at-will employment letter or employment agreement saying that either the employee or the employer can terminate the business relationship at any time. It should include a confidentiality and invention assignment agreement. This will ensure that any intellectual property that you have the employee develop for you as the employer in connection with their job will be owned by the company. And lastly, an employment application giving you permission to conduct a background check and anything else that you need to do. Last, consider electing S corporation status, which will be the subject of another radio show in the future. If you've got questions about incorporating your business or setting up a limited liability company, call us at 703-218-2100. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in a moment.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
Trusts are essential in creating various strategies for accomplishing asset protection, estate planning, and privacy benefits. They've been around for several hundred years, and they have certain essential characteristics. They have one or more trustees who are responsible for administering and carrying out the trust, and beneficiaries who are entitled to trust income or principal, currently or in the future. A trust is typically in the form of a written agreement between a settlor, the creator of the trust, and a trustee. The written agreement provides the settlor will transfer certain assets to a trustee, and the trustee will hold those assets for the benefit of named beneficiaries. Until recently, trusts were only for the wealthy, but that's no longer the case. Now, those with equity in a family home or savings put away for retirement or college are using trusts as an essential ingredient in their estate plans. If you'd like to know more about trusts, give us a call at 703-218-2100.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him at 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Marissa Levin. Welcome, Marissa. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
She's been on the show many times before, and today we're going to have a special discussion about a new book that she's written. But before we start, let me just give you another background and a reminder on Marissa's background. She founded Information Experts, which is a global strategic communications and education firm back in 1995, and launched it with no outside funding. 17 years later, Information Experts is forecasting $20 million in revenue for 2012, and she's led her firm through some very difficult times, including the explosion of the telecom and the internet, the 9/11 terrorist attacks, which shut down D.C. pretty much completely, two recessions, a government shutdown, the collapse of the auto finance and housing markets, two cancer scares, my God, and while raising two sons and a completely hands-on mom. So she's an amazing person. If you haven't heard her speak before, you've got to get out and hear her speak. And today, we're going to be talking about the new book that she's written, which is called Built to Scale, How Top Companies Create Breakthrough Growth with exceptional advisory boards. And what possessed you to write this book, Marissa?
Well, so I've had my firm, like you mentioned, almost 18 years, but the truth is everything that I've done by asking for help from others.
Right.
And you cannot grow as a person, you can't grow a business unless you reach out to those around you to create a community of support and excellence around you so that you can learn best practices and how to do things that you don't know how to do, how to avoid mistakes that you otherwise would make, how to recover from mistakes that you've already made, and just how to get from where you are now to where you want to be. You really need experts to be in your corner to help you navigate the path of growth. So a couple years ago, we had really kind of reached this point of stagnation where I just couldn't get past a certain plateau. I couldn't really get past $5 million.
Okay.
We were really spinning our wheels, and I was out to breakfast actually with a mentor, and he said to me, "Have you thought about building an advisory board?" And I said, "I didn't even really know what an advisory board was. You know, what is that? And, you know, where do I find advisors, and how do you do that? And what does that all mean?" And he kind of gave me kind of like a 50,000 foot overview of what an advisory board is. And it was that day that I really set upon the journey of deciding that if I wanted to take my business to the next level, I needed to learn from people who had already done it. I needed to learn from people who could help me overhaul my processes, my infrastructure, my business development capabilities, open up doors for me that I otherwise wouldn't be able to get into, meet people that I couldn't have met, and just have that level of expertise because I was really learning as I was going along.
So you've given all the reasons, and there probably are more, of why having an advisory board is so important for a growing business. All of these things are really key factors. I mean, they help you build your infrastructure. They help you do all the things that you need to do to grow your business. What are you seeing in terms of the trends that are occurring right now in small business that perpetuate the need for building an advisory board?
Well, the whole thing about, you know, being a small business, as we know, one of the greatest problems that or challenges that small businesses have is access to capital. And so we need to learn how to do more with less. And when you build an advisory board, some people think, well, I can't really build an advisory board because, first of all, I don't know where to find these people. But secondly, I don't know how to compensate them, or I don't have the money to compensate them.
Right.
So what I did with the book is when I went through my process to put in my advisory board, I realized after I had presented to a large group of entrepreneurs that I really did follow a process because I'm very process oriented. So the process I came up with, the model that I came up with, stands for select, compensate, associate, how you like, you know, integrate them into your organization, leverage, how you leverage your advisors, and then how you evaluate, evolve, and exit them as your business grows, because a board is a very fluid process. You won't just do it once.
Which stands for scale.
And that scale, right. So that's where the idea of the scale model came in. So to talk about the trends that really make it essential for businesses that want to grow to have a board, one of the things, as I mentioned, is access to capital.
Right.
So I know as a small business owner, I can't go out and hire five VPs that I need. I can't hire a VP of sales and a VP, you know, of capture and a VP of operations. But yet I need all of that.
Right.
And so if you can create an advisory team around you where you're compensating them with equity, and you are the one who educated us, and you're the subject matter expert in my book on the four different ways that a business owner can actually give equity. Or
another shameless plug for Wayne Zell.
But I mean, you're the person I trusted
Thank
to come
you.
To. And
Thank
so,
you.
You know, you explained how, you know, you've helped other business owners create a performance-based system that you can provide small pieces of equity incrementally to advisors that will keep them emotionally invested, financially invested and really willing and committed to helping you grow your business, I don't make a move without a lot of my advisors.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no way I could afford to bring them in and pay them salaries.
Sure.
So that's just one way. That's one trend is the limited access to capital, but that shouldn't stop you from finding the people that you need.
Right.
Another trend is the fact that there's going to be a huge influx of M&A activity because as the government tightens its spending, there's going to be more roll-ups and more contractions of contracts. And in order to survive in that business, again, you need to surround yourself with the right people that can help you build an infrastructure. Because what I've learned as we've scaled our business is that when a business is acquired, and you can certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but just from what I've learned from you and from other experts and just from my own research, in order for a business to basically be an attractive acquisition candidate, that business cannot just be solely reliant on the business owner.
Absolutely.
And they need to be able to have infrastructure, process, long-term contract backlog. They need to have, you know, solid people. When a business is acquired, all of those things are taken into play. And a business owner can't build all of that themselves.
Well, particularly in the government contracting sector,
right,
where services are being rendered. But if it's not a long-term backlog of long-term contracts, it would be products or mm-hmm. other valuable assets, including humans. Human resources are probably the most valuable asset that we have in our business today.
Right. And so that's another trend, is the whole M&A activity is going to be picking up and contracts are going to be harder and harder to get. And so you want to make sure you're building out an infrastructure that extends way beyond just the business owner, because
right.
the business owner is not the value in the company.
Right.
It's everything that surrounds the business owner.
It's business succession planning too, in case you don't sell. If
yeah.
there is not an M&A transaction, you still want to have a group there behind you in case something happens to you.
Right. And so that board behind you can not only provide that expertise, but they provide a gateway to other expertise. And I'll give you an example of what's happening at Information Expert. So, you know, historically, we've been very content centric, where we
right.
design and develop training materials, marketing materials, human capital programs. Well, we have a gold mine of technology and product at Information Experts that we've designed and developed for our clients. We've designed an unbelievable content management system that now some of our clients are actually licensing. And we have a product suite that we're launching
Brilliant.
In August. And the
So
trend,
what you did was you did all this content. You figured out ways how to deliver it faster. And then you created a process, a product of delivering the content, mm-hmm. creating the content so that others can use it.
Right. And we have the services, the training, the marketing, and the human capital that can wrap around it. A lot of companies who bring products to market, they don't have those services that wrap around it. They throw the product out there.
Right.
And then you need training and you need marketing and you need change management. Well, guess what? We have all those services. So now
Absolutely.
We have the product suite. And we have the services, and we're going to market with these products, and companies are already licensing our products.
How did the board help you do this?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because I'm actually in the process of looking for a board member that is a productization expert. So I am right now recruiting a board member that can help me, really, who has the experience of product licensing, software licensing, that can make sure that I'm doing this right, because I don't want to leave a lot of revenue on the table, and
right.
I want to do this right. So one of the other trends that's happening in the government space right now, and I was just at a board meeting for one of my large contracts last night talking about this, is what we're going to see, not just as a buzzword, but as a mandate, is lowest cost technically acceptable, period. That is what is going to win contracts now.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
Lowest cost technically acceptable. So again, going back to surrounding yourself with experts who can say, you need to reposition your company and your services and your products this way in order to make this happen. I mean, one of my board members is the ex-commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, and I don't make a move without him.
Right.
He's a procurement god, okay? Obviously, if there's a shift now in procurement direction that everything is going to lowest cost technically acceptable, he's going to help me build my strategy on that. So these are just some of the ways that a board can help a company make sure that they're positioning for success.
Now, you did a lot of research for this book, and
mm-hmm.
You interviewed more than 150 CEOs, and specifically for the book, interviewed 30 mm-hmm. CEOs and included excerpts from the interviews
right.
in the book, and very valuable information. What were some of the biggest takeaways and the biggest surprises that you experienced in these interviews?
So I would say that the biggest takeaways surrounded the compensation section, that first of all, a lot of business owners in their acts of desperation, knowing that they needed help when their businesses were just starting out, they gave away way too much equity. Because you know what? If you give away 25% of nothing, it's really not that much, right? If you're just starting out.
Right.
But if you give away 25% of $10 million or $15 million, that ends up being a lot
of money.
That's
a lot of money.
Right. And these board members, they're not even part-time employees. They're only giving you, you know, a certain number of hours, maybe a month. They're
right.
It's a very, very small amount of invested time that they're making. And you have taught me, you know, when you bring on a board member, you give a very small piece up front and it's performance based, and then it grows incrementally.
You try to do it on a performance basis.
Yeah.
But you also don't have, you're not obligated to give a certain amount to somebody for them to come on board. You may give them a little bit, see how they do. And if
right.
they do a little bit better job, then you give them some more too. There's different ways of approaching it.
So the two things that really surprised me were fell on both ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. The one was that some people just gave away the farm with, you know, out of act of desperation and didn't even tie it to performance and just kind of came up with an arbitrary number. The other side was that people didn't give anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were wondering why their board members weren't very helpful. Well, you get what you pay for. And
right.
so if you're not giving away anything, and maybe, you know, the reason was they didn't know how to do it. Okay.
Right.
It was a lack of knowledge and understanding on the process, which is why the book is so essential.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I met someone at a conference that I did a signing at, and she was telling me that she was meeting with an advisor, potential advisor, 3 days later, and she was going to give him 20% of her company. And I said, just buy my
hold
book.
Hold on.
Buy my book for $20.
Let me ask you a question.
Buy it for the price of three Starbucks and read that chapter before you meet with them.
What are some of the biggest mistakes that they make, that the CEOs make?
So the first one, I mean, definitely is the compensation. But also, when you do engage a board, there is no structure around it. There's no performance. They're not saying, this is what I'm expecting of you. People aren't given specific jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And when you build a board, and I talk about the 35 ways to leverage the board in the book, there's actually a list of 35 ways.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways in which you can use it. Like a board is a great recruitment and a retention tool. Okay. So my board doesn't just stop with me. The board is not there to improve Marissa. The board is there to improve the business,
right.
which makes life better for everybody.
If you want to improve Marissa, you go get a coach for that, right?
That's exactly right. And I do have a private coach, but this is about how do I build my business and improve my employees, help them reach their potential, help my company reach its potential. So for example, we have a new board member and he's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked for a very large systems integrator company,
mm-hmm.
and he did capture for, you know, $250 million, $500 million programs. He knows how to do win themes and strategies. So he basically is now mentoring my business development director.
Good.
I mean,
good.
That, you know, it isn't just about Marissa. It's about putting these people into my company. And that's one of the mistakes that a CEO makes, is that they bring on a board and it stops with them.
Right.
And they don't recognize that they have this goldmine of mentors and coaches that can be, you know, infiltrated throughout the company.
Absolutely.
Which becomes recruitment and retention.
Well, we've got about a minute left. Where can listeners buy the book
and
contact you? Yeah. How can they find out more about Built to Scale?
So I own a second company as well as Information Experts. I own Successful Culture, and the book is for sale at www.successfulculture.com. It's available in both Kindle format as well as a regular book, but successfulculture.com is exactly where they can get the book and opt into my blog on organizational culture and leadership. And they can reach me at marissa@successfulculture.com or mlevin@informationexperts.com. And I'm all over Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.
Man, you've got a lot to say, and we just need more time to talk about this book. It's called Built to Scale, How Top Companies Create Breakthrough Growth Through Exceptional Advisory Boards. Check it out on successfulculture.com. You could also probably buy it through Amazon, but it's better to buy it through successfulculture.com. Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Blueprint for Wealth, and join us next week for another special topic and special guest. Have a great week.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. with your Blueprint for Wealth right here on 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.